Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to episode 35 of the Women's Running Podcast. I'm Esther Newman, editor of Women's Running, and this week I'm chatting to Bryony Gordon, author, columnist, podcaster, founder of Mental Health Mates, underwear marathon runner, and champion of body positivity. Bryony has always been firmly on our radar. I first met Bryony just over a year ago, before our first lockdown and the world tipped off its axis. We met then as part of the Celebrate You crew, a bunch of women all running the Vitality 10,000 or the London Marathon with the ambition of encouraging more women to do the same and to feel confident and empowered by their own bodies. Since launching Mental Health Mates a few years ago, Bryony also encouraged the event directors of the Vitality 10,000 to make mental health a focus of the run too. And last year, we all ran the virtual Vitality 10,000 for our heads as well as our hearts. We're about to do the same this May too. If you'd like to join us, there's plenty of time to sign up to the virtual event at vitalitylondon10000.co.uk. It costs just £19 to enter, and for that you'll get a beautiful medal and a technical tee. You can run at any time in the May half term and you'll be part of our 10k community. It would be lovely to have you with us. Holly and I are doing it too, and we'll be talking about our training in next week's podcast, so listen in for that. Bryony talks to me here about founding Mental Health Mates when she realised that that community didn't exist already, and she talks frankly about her own mental health. She also talks about running and changing the reason why she ran, for the gains and not for the losses. She's a joy and an inspiration. Enjoy. The Women's Running Podcast is sponsored by Decathlon Second Life. Second Life is a new sustainability initiative helping us to recycle, repair and reuse sports equipment. Decathlon wanted to reduce the number of products going to waste, so their team of expert technicians refurbish used products such as bikes and treadmills before offering them to you with the same guarantees and returns policy as a brand new product. And they haven't stopped there either. Every product comes with a minimum 10% discount, meaning Second Life works for our planet and your pocket. Decathlon is dedicated to sustainability, and this is another step in our journey to a greener future. With your support, Decathlon hopes Second Life will save over 100,000 kilograms of carbon emissions this year alone. Give a product a second life. Find out more at secondlife.decathlon.co.uk.
But it must be quite weird to be asked questions, actually, because you do a podcast. So what does it feel like to be with me asking you questions rather than you asking the questions? That feels a bit strange.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. Like, I'm sort of a bit used to it now. Like, I don't mind, like, it's I think it's helped my interviewing skills, because I realize it's not, like, I used to get really scared before I sat down to interview someone because I thought they would just instinctively be like, oh, I'm the defensive or whatever, or, you know, evil journalist. But I now realize that actually it gives me an insight into how to be a better interviewer, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I don't mind it. It's quite nice to talk about myself.
Good. Well, that's useful for me then. So, I mean, I think, like, the first thing that I was like, so I've got my little list of like briny bullet points.
Okay.
Because I alliterate here. So I've got sort of things about you. It's all these books. You've written so many books, which makes me really envious, because obviously I'm a frustrated novelist.
And I've never written a novel, though.
Would you ever?
Yeah, absolutely. But I, you know, it's interesting because I think writing a novel is a completely different thing to writing nonfiction. And that's definitely what I want to do next. But yeah, I've never written a novel. So I, you know, like, when people go, oh, I've always wanted to write a novel, I'm like, oh, you're totally talking to the wrong person, because I don't have a clue. And, like, it's a different skill set. Although I'm doing some work on something which I can't really talk about, that involves, it's like fictionalized, and it's really fun. Like, I'm really enjoying it. Do you know what I mean? Like, allowing, because I don't feel so self-conscious. I don't feel like I'm having to edit myself and, oh, what are people going to think if I admit this? Or, you know, like, it sort of doesn't matter. And although I've always written quite, you know, all my writing is very out there, you know, like, I'm very, I suppose, quote unquote, honest, you know, I suppose that's what I'm sort of, all my books have in common. But you also have to bear in mind, like, I'm always constantly thinking about the other people in my life. So, like, my husband, my daughter, my parents, you know, my siblings, all of that. Because, you know, I can't tell their story, do you know what I mean? And it's not fair to. So there's always, you're sort of constantly sort of thinking, how much can I put in this? How far? Whereas doing fiction, it's like the sky's the limit, you know?
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I was going to ask about, was the sort of confessional nature, in a way, of a lot of your writing, that you put so much of yourself out there, but obviously you must keep...
Yeah, there's lots I don't put out there. And I, you know, I sort of, that word confessional, I find, like, I think it's like everything I've written, people have got in touch with me and told me that it's happened to them too. And, like, I think the reason I've suffered so much in my life is thinking that I'm the only one that has experienced these things, and that I'm a freak and I'm the worst person in the world. And then, so writing about them is really my way of saying, if this has happened to you too, it's like a way of finding my people. Do you know what I mean? It helps me a lot. Mm-hmm. Because people come back and they go, oh, I've done that too. What a relief. And it's a relief for me as well, because, you know, all mental illnesses work like that. They kind of isolate you and make you feel very freakish, when in fact, it's an illness like any other. Do you know what I mean? It's your brain misfiring, as all organs will do at some point. Well, not all, but, you know, as organs have a tendency to do. So I think that I don't, you know, I've had to, the things I've written, I've had to say, they've been part of my, it's like a survival thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, I've got really well through writing this stuff, you know. I feel like and I can't, like, if people are kind of judgy about it, that's their problem. Do you know what I mean? It's not my place. And I don't, and as I said, and people go, well, do you worry about your daughter reading it one day? And I kind of find that such a bizarre question, because it's like, I hope my daughter one day lives in a world where people can talk about this stuff openly. Do you know what I mean? And they don't, because it doesn't get to the kind of extreme points that it got to for me, if there's an outlet, a safe and healthy outlet for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's why I write this stuff, because it's like, this is, we all go through variations of these things, and, you know, and I, you know, for example, addiction and alcoholism, like everyone is touched by that, you know, like you don't have to be, not, I'm not saying everyone is an alcoholic or an addict, but you know, most people know someone who is or has been affected by those issues. So I just think it's either we just want to kind of pretend they don't happen and bury them under the carpet and not talk about them, and then people continue to suffer in silence, or we admit they happen and people can be more open and breathe out and get better. And that's what my work is about, really. So
yeah, I loved what you were saying when you were talking about how your writing is helpful for you when you do it. And I was reading something that you'd written about how you were coming to the end of Mad World, or you came to the end of Mad World, and it feels like you had like at least two epiphanies, if not more, but two kind of almost direct consequences of that were going for a run and finding that particular kind of tool, but also setting up Mental Health Mates.
Yeah, so Mad Girl, which was my second book.
Sorry, Mad Girl.
No, yeah. That's all right. in which I wrote about my OCD and sort of depression. And writing it was like, it was me kind of, I was trying to work some stuff out. And by just admitting to it, originally I'd written about my OCD in a column in the Telegraph, and I'd had such a huge response back, and it had been really helpful for me. And then obviously writing about the stuff is very difficult. So I had writing Mad Girl, I was not in a great place, but that's okay. But yeah, I did realize, I thought I'm gonna try this running malarkey, because I'd like tried all the different combinations of drugs and alcohol to try and make myself feel better. None of them had worked, and spoiler alert, they've made things much, much worse. And I was like, maybe I should try doing what the experts say. So that was how I discovered what I got into running, but then also how I came up with the idea of Mental Health Mates, because I was out running on my local common, and I saw all these people sort of exercising together or coming, you know, congregating together. And I was listening to this podcast about the writer Carson McCullers, who she died of alcoholism in her 50s, but she tried to kill herself on several occasions. And there was this archive audio footage of her, and she said, sometimes it feels like everyone is part of a we except for me. And that sort of summed up to me what it felt like to be unwell. And so I thought, I need to find my we. So I went home and was like, I'm going to tweet something out and see if people want to come for a walk. And, you know, my husband was like, what if a load of nutters turn up? And I was like, that's the point. And so it was 5 years ago now, and I turned up. I said, I'll be at this place at this time, and if you want to come. And 20 people showed up, and it's now this sort of thing. It's all over the country. People do their own Mental Health Mates walks, and you know, I have very little to do with it now, and that's the joy. Is like, it's not it allows people to find their own kind of tribes, and it gives them a bit of agency when otherwise they might not have any, you know. It's not something I ever imagined I would do, but it's lovely to see how it grows, and like the amazing work of so many of the walk leaders, and how it helps them in the same way it's helped me.
Yeah, and I read that there was that lovely comment you had from an older woman who said that she hoped that yours was going to be the last generation to sort of keep things under wraps, sort of thing, in terms of mental health. And I found that quite weepy.
Well, yeah, I do think that a lot of, I think a lot of what's happening now culturally, you know, in the greater landscape of, you know, we talk about the culture wars and woke and da 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 da, and Brexit and Trump, who thankfully isn't president anymore, but I think a lot of it is that sort of death rattle of a culture whereby you keep quiet and it's all about serving a particular type of person, and anything that doesn't serve that type of person doesn't, you know, is to be kind of is to be shouted down and silenced, you know. And I think that's what we're seeing now, and because people can't deal with it. Like, people can't deal with, you know, if you yourself have grown up and you haven't had any of those opportunities, it's to talk about stuff going on, it can be really weird to see it, you know. I understand how, but I do think, yeah, in a few generations' time, it'll be totally normal. Well, I hope it will, but I don't think
back to that idea of course being okay with your daughter reading your books.
Yeah, and also I think we hear a lot about like an epidemic of mental health issues happening at the moment, but I'm sure that social media and all of, you know, an online living comes with all, and obviously a pandemic comes with all of its own unique pressures that haven't been seen before. But I don't think that our young people now are more, you know, I don't think it's more common. I think that the pressures are different and they manifest in different ways. But people have always suffered from mental illness. Like, always. Do you know what I mean? They just haven't just spoken about it. And so when you hear kind of people going, oh, in my day, you know, we didn't talk about this thing. We just got on with it. Stiff upper lip. And I was fine. And it's like, well, maybe you were fine, right? But what about... There were lots of people that weren't fine. Do you know what I mean? Lots of people that fell into alcoholism, addiction. They killed themselves, but it wasn't called suicide because suicide was illegal until 1961. It was a crime. You know, it's like there's all these assumptions. And anyway, you know, I think I don't know where I've gone with that, but it's always been there, and I think we're just talking about it more and not as willing to suffer with it anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talk about it a lot more. We talk about it a lot more in the magazine. And I think that's because of the massive widespread acceptance that running is a very important tool. And it's a kind of such an important thing for us to get out there. Is it's not, you know, we don't want to encourage women to run for some other reason other than it feels good, you know. It really does feel good, and it might just only feel good when you've stopped running, but it really does feel, it really is beneficial, really does feel good. So but why did you choose, why was it running particularly? Was it just those groups on the common? Was it,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Who knows why? I just it was something I could do. It was something I could do easily, and I didn't have to like sign up to have a gym membership or it was, and I think it's interesting because I had always flirted with exercise, and I had run before. I remember sort of 50 when I was like 29, I did the Great South Run. I didn't know what I was doing, but I did it. And so I wasn't a complete novice. It wasn't like I'd never run before, but I'd always hated it. And the reason I'd always hated it was because I was doing it for totally the wrong reasons. Because I'd spend the whole time berating myself and going, you're not fast enough, you're not thin enough, da, 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 da. You're doing this so that you can lose weight or you can look a certain way. And the moment that I stopped doing that and I started doing it, because if I do this for 20 minutes, my body, or 30 minutes, whatever, my body is going to start releasing endorphins, and endorphins are going to just make me feel better, right? And I feel like shit. And I could spend all day in this bedroom in the dark, and I want to spend all day in this bedroom in the dark, and I'm scared of what happens if I get up and I go outside and I don't spend the day in this bedroom in the dark. But I'm also scared of what happens if I stay in the dark, if that makes sense. Like, I had to do something. So running, when I started doing it for like for the gains, I guess, and not the losses, it made a real difference. And I still struggle a lot with, my husband he's one of those running obsessives who is trying to get his, you know, his kilometer under 4 minutes or whatever. And he went out on Saturday and he just ran 30 kilometers. And I'm like, you know, he's not training for anything. You know, the only times I've run 30 kilometers is when I've been training for a marathon, and I've been high as a kite afterwards. It's not like just this casual thing I do on a Sunday. But I had to work really hard at getting out of that. And so people often say to, like, sometimes people, you know, I don't, you know, like when I did my first marathon, people were like, what was your time? And I'd be like, what was your time? And I'd be like, oh, I haven't done a marathon. I was like, exactly, so shut up. Like, who cares? Like, I want to get around it before I'm being swept up by the bin men who are trying to clear the course, you know, obviously. But I can get into that, you know, out on the common. I'm like, oh, this man's just like, or this woman's just like sped past me and I'm really slow. You know, I feel like I'm wading through treacle sometimes, but I'm doing it. And that's, you know, I have to really be kind to myself in that way. And I can also have mornings where I wake up and I'm like, I don't want to go for a run. And then I don't. And then I beat myself up for it. And I'm like, as long as this doesn't carry on for more than, say, when I'm in that stage, I'm like, this can carry on for 5 days. And then you get the hell out of bed and you just do it. And that's like that's my baseline. And I'm lucky because I run now with my friend Emma Campbell, who I know writes a column for your magazine. And so we hold each other accountable in that way. But I know that each, you know, I was actually talking, I went for a run with her this morning and we were talking about, you know, it had been about 6 days since we'd gone for a run and sort of stuff had got in the way. But we were like, but we put, when we can, we're putting runs in the bag and we're doing it, you know. And the point is we're, you know, we're doing at least 3 a week and it's fine. And I don't know. So it's for me, it's just about getting out there and feeling good. And as you say, like, I never want to go for a run, but I never regret going for one.
Yeah, absolutely. But then, so how do you then make that leap from someone that decides to go for that first run for you rather than for any other kind of motive? How do you make the leap from that run to a marathon? How does that journey start?
Well, I mean, it doesn't like, it's not like, oh, today I'm going to get up and run a marathon. It's like, as you know, Esther, it's a journey.
It is a journey.
I don't know. Like, it's just like, it was like a crazy challenge. I was like, let's do it. But I think, you know, anyone who's done Couch to 5K will see like that sense of achievement when, you know, you do it and you follow the program and you get there and you're like, wow, my body's quite awesome. Look what it's done, you know. And that, you know, with the marathon is like, it's like multiplied by a million. Do you know what I mean? Like I still look back and I could kind of like capture that first marathon I did and the training period leading up to it. And I just couldn't believe some weeks what I was doing and what I was managing and how I felt. And I remember when I came to do my last like long run, which was like 20 miles, we're getting up, going out, and it was a lovely, beautiful April day, similar to today, even though it's March. and I got up and I went out and I ran 20 miles, and then I got home, and then I had to like I had some lunch, and then I went and had a meeting in town, and then I went and met people for dinner in the evening, and then I woke up the next morning and I didn't feel like, my body just felt fine, and I couldn't believe it, you know. I was like, whoa. And still now I look back on that and go, you know, and having gone from I remember being like, I've got to be able to run 10k by this point, and thinking, I just can't do it, I'm not going to be able to do it. And then getting to the stage of that final long run and being like, oh, all I've got to do on top of that is another 10K. And being like, wow, that happened in like 4 or 5 months, you know? And I think that for me, that's a sort of, it's a metaphor for what can happen if you just apply yourself and stick with something and you run through the really shit bits, you know, and I just, it was magic. It was, I just couldn't believe it. Like, that was honestly, that first marathon was one of my best days of my life. And I sort of in my head, I'm like, I keep trying to sort of recreate it, and I don't think I ever will. And I just need to get over that. But
when was that? When was your first marathon?
2017.
Was that the London?
Yeah. And then I did the next year, I did London again with my friend Jada, and she's a plus size model, and we'd met, and she was like, you've done a marathon. I was like, yeah. She was like, will you do one with me? I want to do a marathon. And so I was like, okay. So we signed up, lucky to be able to get places, obviously. And we were as we were running, as we were training for that one, I was, and it was like the beast from the east. It was like a really brutal winter. Mm. And I remember saying to her, why don't we just do it in our underwear to show that women of all different body types can do this, you know, that we don't have to be, it's about enjoying yourself. It's about, you know, if the elite women can wear this kind of stuff, why can't we? Mm. She was like, yeah, let's do it. So then, and as it turned out on the day, so it was like, we trained through that winter of 2017, 2018, and it was like brutal snow, horrible. And then on the day of the actual marathon, it was like 26 degrees. And our bodies were like, what? As everyone else's was. But we
marathon.
Did. We were in our underwear, which I suppose was a bonus, really. But we did come through. We basically, I think we took as long as like the guys, the firefighters from the Grenfell Tower, these amazing dudes, you know, who were wearing like full firefighting outfit and oxygen tanks on their back, and then we were in our like underwear, and it was so hot and our bodies were so unused to it that we just kind of like were just dawdling through it, but we did it.
Overtaking stories, I always find them really hilarious. I remember having this at work once because I was running a half marathon once, and I was overtaken by a chap in kind of fatigues, I guess, and he was wearing a backpack with a weight written on the back of it, and it was my weight. So he was basically running with me on his back, and he was running faster than me.
Mm. Well, you see, this is where we have to stop ourselves, because that is, you know, it's like everyone's different, and like, yeah. But you're out there running it, you know. It's like just because that's you're true. Not running with like a washing machine on your back, like some people do. In fact, I think I saw someone train. I've always wondered, how do you train for that? And the other day I went out in the park and there was a woman and she was dragging. She was running with a tire. I was like, maybe she's training for something like that. Anyway, it doesn't
work. How do you train to run a marathon in your pants?
Well, it's a good question, because you can't just take off in the local streets in your underwear, because you'd get arrested and it might even be a little bit dangerous. But we went to, what we did was, I have these friends who run this thing called the Body Camp in Ibiza, and they're these amazing, like fantastic, like exercise retreats, but they're about like doing it because you're enjoying it and not, you know, it's anyone of any ability can go, and they tailor it to you and they make you feel really great. And I was like, can we come, and then we could try doing it in Ibiza, doing a run in our underwear, because we thought that in Ibiza for some reason it was warmer and they wouldn't care so much. So we did that. We went and then we ran 15 miles around Ibiza in our underwear, and literally no one batted an eyelid.
Okay,
that was our like dry run to check out which bits of us are going to like chafe, and where are we going to have, do you know what I mean? Where are we going to put where are we going to keep things?
Yeah.
Actually, in the end, a great friend of mine who's very much called Tim Weeks, he ran alongside us with a backpack on with all of our stuff to support us so we could do it, which was fantastic. God
useful.
Bless him. He's an amazing man, and he so that's how we trained for a marathon in our underwear.
A person that was basically a kind of a personification of a running Hydra pack,
basically, because there's nowhere to put it, do you know what I mean? There's nowhere to put like your gels or your and we had to take a lot of like Body Glide with us because it was a really hot day, and also because it was so hot they had firemen outside the fire stations with like the hoses to run through, so everything was just running off us, so we're like more, but anyway, that was fun. It was fun. The response we got was just incredible, you know.
It,
so positive.
It sound like another weeper, but you said that your first marathon was the kind of the biggie in terms of how you felt,
and it was amazing.
Was that the one I was reading about in Eat Drink Run, where,
yeah,
because that already made me have a little cry this morning. It's probably time of the month. But this, when you talk about meeting Chloe at mile six,
Yes.
And that was in Greenwich, I think. And it's like, oh, it was so moving, so moving.
Yeah, it was an amazing moment. People were so, the funny thing was that they were like, because I was doing it with their heads together, they loved it. My friends loved it because they got to sit at these cheer points with like Prince Harry and Prince William. They were like, it's great, Bryony. Will you run a marathon again? I'm like, They're like, we had the best day. And look, I got the selfie with them. And they were really funny. And I was like, oh, great. I just ran a marathon, guys. My mum was like, oh, Prince Harry's so nice. I'm like, I just ran a marathon. Oh, yes. But anyway, let me tell you the story about what Prince Harry said to me. I'm like, okay. To be fair to Prince Harry, he did call me afterwards to congratulate me. So,
oh, well, there you go then.
Yeah. it was quite funny. It was a lovely day. It was really fun.
Was he around to see you after you'd run your second marathon when you were in your pants?
No.
Oh.
Also, it took us so long. I mean, the first one took me so long that they weren't there at the finish line, which is why he had to call. So long, it was like 5.5 hours or whatever. I was proud of that time.
God.
Yeah. No, the second one was. Well, the first one was that amazing. It was that amazing. It was the one that was, you know, the Heads Together was the official charity. And I'd just done this podcast with Prince Harry in which he spoke about his mental health, and it had come out the week before. And there was just this amazing energy, you know. And I think it sort of like, it certainly took me by. It was just, it felt fantastic. It felt like it was really part of something amazing and something genuinely positive and uplifting for the country. So there was all of that going on as well, you know.
Yeah. So you did, so that your first one was then for Heads Together, and then your second one
I did for Heads Together as well.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I raised something like £45,000 for the first one, and I think we raised something like 16.
That's amazing. And so have you done another one since?
No. I was supposed to do it last year. I signed up to do it in memory of my friend of mine. My godson's mother died in 2019 of autoimmune liver disease, which is very rare, but it mostly affects women. And she had developed it while pregnant with her second child. And Andrea Colville, amazing woman, and she very sadly died in July 2019, and her second son was like 10 months old. So my friend Rob, her husband, has set up this fund with the Medical Research Foundation to try and look into more research, basically, for autoimmune hepatitis. So I was signed up last year to do that. Obviously, that didn't happen. And then we did have the option to do it in October, just virtually, but I just thought I can't, various stuff, it didn't work out because, you know, like last year just didn't work out, did it?
that's a good epitaph, I think.
And hopefully I will do it this October.
Oh, brilliant.
And finally, yeah, raise a bit more money for the Medical Research Foundation in memory of Andrea, which will be lovely. And that's sort of my... And then maybe that will be it, I think.
You think? Three?
It's enough. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'm very much the kind of person that needs to have a very good, like a reason to do these things. And that to me is a very good reason.
Yeah.
So
when do you start the training?
I don't know. When do you have to start the training for it?
Do you know what, right? So I was looking at, we did some marathon training guides for our last issue.
and the lovely run coach that writes the training guides put a little box in saying, you know, when you're, if you're training for the London Marathon, for instance, you need to start here. Anyway, it said May, which seems close. Yeah.
But is it like 16 weeks out?
I think that's about 20. It might be, is that 16 or 20? I don't know. But I think that's kind of, that really is starting from, you know, your long run is going to be something like 4 or 5 miles or something. So,
well, I think I'm nervous about training for something over the summer because I hate running in heat. I think that marathon like tormented me. But I would rather run through the summer and then get to October and then it to be a bit cooler and be like, wow, I can just like kick this one out than the other way round, which was training through the cold. So I'm not a fast runner at all, but I find if I'm in the rain and the cold, I just go that little bit faster because I just want to get
rain
it over with.
Rain makes me run faster for sure. Yeah.
And it's quite nice that it cools you down, you know, it's like swimming, isn't it, where you're doing the work you don't really realize you are. So so we'll see. I've sort of learned not to plan further than this afternoon.
Yeah. I know I'm down for the London and I'm still being quite tentative about it, and I haven't, it's certainly not like this time, well, not this time last year, but kind of like last February where I was kind of gearing myself up for
it. We got as far as, my memories are, I remember feeling really grateful for that training because I know there's like a lot of people find it really annoying that it was cancelled, obviously. I mean, not annoying, but were disappointed.
Yeah.
But I sort of tried to feel kind of grateful that I had got myself to, like, I felt healthy. I'd been running 13-14 miles regularly by the point that it was announced that it was cancelled. So I felt like, oh, well, okay, but oh, look, the universe has conspired to make me fit and reasonably fit and healthy, and there's a pandemic coming along, and that's a good thing, you know. But I was like, I'll keep it up throughout lockdown. I'll just be going out, and to the point where I'm like, oh, 5k is like wading through treacle. I did 5k this morning and I was like, and I'm so sick of it. I'm like, I have run around that fucking common, sorry for swearing, like 300 times. I'm like a dog chasing its tail and I'm so bored of it. On Boxing Day, me and my husband went out for a run. We ran into town and I barely even realized I was running because I was so stimulated by everything I was looking at. And you realize that so much of running is mental. And I'm just like, oh, look, here we go. Here's a run. Same common, same things. I try and get excited by it, but I can't. But anyway.
It's kind of upsetting going through the sort of the training ups and downs where you get yourself up to that. I mean, it's lovely getting to that point where you're like, oh, this weekend I'm only doing 10 miles. You know, it's lovely to get to that sort of stage where distances are suddenly achievable and fun. And you can, it means that if you're doing your 10 mile run, it means you can go to places that make the run, you know, way more interesting. But the coming down at that training when suddenly it all seems so hard, but you forget how easy it is to get yourself back up again because of muscle memory and all those kind of lovely things. So,
yeah.
So what was running in lockdown like? Was there any going on?
Yeah, you know, I've been very consistent, but I haven't gone very far. Obviously, no one has. It's like, yes, me and you, all of us, probably the same. I haven't done distant. Like, my distance has not really got further than sort of 7K. You know, I haven't, but that's okay. And I'm like, this is fine. I just carry on. I just go out there, get the, you know, just do it. Keep myself fairly, consistent. And that's fine. And I like that. You know, it's sort of like upkeep running. It's certainly for my head. I've needed it, you know?
Yeah.
So yes, I've run consistently throughout the pandemic. I've been running away from my own head.
As we all do, I think.
Yeah, each morning. I was like, get out. Well, also because I was like, this is the only time I'm allowed to get out of the house, you know? It's like, one day, we did have to isolate for a bit. And my husband said, I bet you can't run 5K around the back garden. And I was like, okay, a challenge. And our garden is tiny. And I did it. And I was like, I felt really dizzy afterwards. I was like a dog, like chasing its tail. And the map on my Apple Watch was really funny. It was like...
just a scribble.
Yeah, basically. But I did it. So, and I was like, I think I prefer running like outside, like with a... Yeah, I suppose just on the spot, basically.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy those virtual challengey things that much. I think I was climbing up Snowdon on my stairs, and my dad was doing the same in his house in Liverpool, and he's an achiever, so he made it to the top. We were sort of WhatsApping the whole way through, and I made it halfway up and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to get airlifted off now.
Airlift me off this challenge. Yeah. I totally get it. Like, I don't know. I can't imagine ever getting into anything like Peloton or something like that. But like, fair play to people who do. But that's probably more to do with the fact that I hate cycling.
Yeah. I'm not keen either. But maybe it'll come to me. I don't know. And I wanted to talk to you too, because I think you live quite close to Clapham Common.
I do, yeah.
So all of Sarah Everard must have been so kind of pertinent, so close to home, so terrifying. What did that feel like?
I didn't feel terrified, but then I'm not that, you know, I just found it very sad. Like, she went missing from literally a few yards, you know, she left a house that was on the next street along. So it's very, like, these things are just very sad. A friend of mine said, this is, it kind of got to me, and she said, and he lives around the corner as well, and she was like, I could have given her a lift home. And I felt this sort of like, because it's not the I'm very aware that for a lot of people, running doesn't ever feel safe, you know, and it can feel very threatening sometimes. I think because I run with another friend all the time, and because I'm a little bit older as well, you know, I'm in my 40s, I've sort of gone past that. But I have had experiences when I was, you know, where men say lewd things, you know, and it makes me just feel really angry. It makes me feel angry. Like, I don't. It's very odd when you're like, you know, we run past the bandstand, and obviously that's become this sort of beautiful shrine to her. But I try and focus on like what the good stuff. Like, people are fundamentally good. Like, it's so lovely that every time we run past, we're like, oh, people have done this beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So someone has done something ugly and disgusting and horrific, and, you know, but most people have come together to do this beautiful thing. I feel really grateful to live in a community that reacted in the way that it did. Yeah. Rather than, do you know what I mean? Like, it was really people, you know, people sending, you know, all our the neighbor WhatsApp groups, everyone sending around the poster and all of that, and but it's, you know, it's horrible. I'd like it, if it would be nice if that sort of shrine for her stayed in some way, you know. I don't know, you'd have to speak to her family about that. I can't answer, but yeah, my answer would be that, you know, I try and remember that people are mostly good.
Yeah. And I think if we've got any silver linings to grab from 2020, that sense of community that you were talking about, I think there's, it certainly feels like it where I live. There's that it's not that it wasn't neighbourly to begin with, but the kind of the WhatsApp groups that have sprung up, the kind of the care for your neighbours and, you know, looking out for people generally.
Yeah, I think we can, you know, we can focus. It's been shit, don't get me wrong. But I watched this Gerard Butler movie the other day where, like, the world was ending. Gerard had to save it, obviously. People were, like, looting, shooting. And I was like, I watched it and said to my husband, do you know what? That didn't really happen, did it? It was like, we were like, let's paint rainbows and put them in the window. Let's all come out onto our doorsteps and clap. And I was like, you know, when push comes to shove, we all are quite generous, kind human beings. Do you know what I mean? And that, I think, is a fantastic thing.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely lovely. Because I did think it was going to be Gerard Butler. Well, I didn't ever envisage Gerard Butler, but I did envisage looting and kind of people generally just going completely feral.
No, so they got a bit worried about loo paper, but otherwise it was fine. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and flour. Don't forget the flour. That's a nightmare around here.
You know, people are essentially good and kind. Yes, people are. Yeah,
because people are generally lovely, but there will always be bastards, I think, is the thing. Yeah, for sure. I don't really know what else to ask you apart from when you're going for your next run.
Oh, on Thursday?
No, I did have something to ask you.
Yeah?
Because when you start your podcasts, you always ask, which I should have done right at the beginning, how you're feeling right now. And I bet you're like massively deflated, aren't you?
I'm like, well.
Oh, I'm feeling rubbish because I've just had this terrible interview.
No. I'm good today. It's a nice day. I'm wearing a dress. I haven't worn a dress for God knows how long. And I'm going to go for a swim at the local Lido. I've booked a slot, which I'm really excited about. It's going to be absolutely freezing, but I think it will be really nice kind of add on to the running, you know, like an ice bath.
That's almost a triathlon you're doing. Maybe you should.
No, I can't. I did do a triathlon once, like a mini triathlon. And the swimming I was really good at. The cycling, I was like, I can't. I hate cycling. I don't know. I tried to do the whatever the equivalent is of the London Marathon, Ride London.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I just gave up, like, 4 weeks into the training. I trained with my friend and we went to Cornwall and I did this, like, and I was like, this is, my bum hurts, I'm scared of the bike, I'm scared of going down hills, I didn't want my feet stuck in the thick, I was scared, I was like, I don't have any control over this machine. My friend was like, you do have control. I'm like, no, you don't understand, I'm shit, I can't drive, I've never had a lesson. Like, I'm the kind of person, like, when I looked at the Suez Canal cargo ship, I'm like, that is what I would do if I could drive. And it's the same kind of thing that I'll make a hash out of the bike somehow. So it's like, just, I'm going to get off this bike and leave it to other people.
Fair enough.
So I'll do the duathlon, you know.
Yeah, like, a little
run and then a nice cooling swim afterwards. Yeah. I think that's like a holiday. That's called a holiday.
Yeah. A triathlon, which is kind of run, swim, sauna.
I did do a mini triathlon in Sardinia, which was ace. But I came second to last. I blame the bike.
Well, there you go. It's the
and they were
fault.
All going, Forza, you can do it. And I was like, I know I can do it. I just don't want to do it. Anyway, if you send me on holiday, I might agree to doing a triathlon at the, you know, at the last day or whatever.
A mini one.
Yeah, a mini one.
And your next run's going to be? Sorry, I interrupted that one.
I'm going to go for a run on Thursday. I'm just going to go for a normal little run.
With Emma.
I'm going to try and do slightly longer. Yeah, and I'm going to try and do slightly longer one on Saturday. Because obviously we've got the Vitality 10K.
We do. Yeah, the end of May. Yeah. So that'd be a lovely thing to do.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get myself, we're going to get an Uber to like Richmond Park and run back. Because I need to just shake it up. I need a different route. You know, and now we're allowed to go a bit further afield.
Yeah, that'd be a lovely thing to do. Yeah, no, I love doing that in October. There was definitely a kind of just like the virtual London Marathon, there was definitely a community feel, even though you're doing it virtually. So that was actually really rather lovely, I thought.
Well, we did it because me and Jada obviously we took our underwear running to the Vitality London 10K
did,
and we
created
Celebrate You with, so it's, yeah, it's a fun thing. I love, you know, we do with you and, you know, I can do like a virtual 10K, but I don't think I'd want to do anything longer than that. Yeah,
fair enough. Oh, thanks for talking to me, Bryony.
Oh, thanks, Esther, it was really nice.
Please join us at the virtual Vitality London 10,000 this May. So many people do it. You're bound to see lots of fellow runners and walkers proudly wearing their numbers during half term, and it has such a lovely community feel. You can walk, jog, or run your 10K. Time is not an issue. The only emphasis is on the time you'll have to yourself. Go to vitalitylondon10000.co.uk and sign up. And if you choose women's running as where you've heard about it, you'll be automatically entered into a competition to win a gorgeous pair of New Balance shoes too. What's not to love? Podcast listeners can claim the best discount we have for membership to Women's Running. Honest, it's better than anything anywhere else. Go to shop.womensrunning.co.uk and enter WRPOD at the checkout to get a whopping 35% off, as well as access to loads of discounts and freebies. Come and join Women's Running. We'd love to have you with us. Happy running.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.